Hi, and welcome to the UCB Theater New York podcast.
Hey, you're John Frusciante.
And you are Will Hines.
That's absolutely right.
This is the podcast for the week of January 17th, which was yesterday, but it started the week officially.
Thank God you pay attention to this.
We have to be scientific about this stuff.
So what we do at the top of the show is we go over what shows are happening at the UCB Theater this week.
That's
our
right.
First segment. And then later we have an interview with some of the creators of Tupac the Musical, which is a show going up Friday.
That's right.
And in the third section, John and I will ramble incessantly about some topic with varying degrees of seriousness and then elicit opinions from everyone that we run into for the rest of the week.
That's right. Or they will force their opinions on us.
Yes,
and we will bask in it.
Yes, I do.
Speaking of which, I do want to just thank real quick everybody who's been listening to the podcast.
Oh, it's amazing. I love it whenever anybody mentions it or tweets it or says it's generous and a nice compliment, even though I'm probably later going to speak about it in a deprecating tone. That's just the default tone I go to.
But that's part of what keeps people glued to it is when you insult people. You know, it's that kind of like, oh, I have to meet their expectations.
You sure? Really?
Is oh, yeah. That's what you just trash people and then that's how they love you.
I guess
right?
So.
That's what I think love is.
I guess it works for a lot of people in this community, so let's keep it going.
Yeah, but thank you very much, everybody who's listening and writing in and all that stuff.
Okay, yeah, so let's get into the shows this week.
So Monday, January 18th, we of course have Maud Night.
So this is the house sketch teams of the UCB Theater. There's six of them, and they all do pretty much a new show every month.
Yeah, completely written, newly written and performed sketch shows every month. And this Monday we have – tonight we have Slow Burn and High Treason going up.
Great. Both great teams.
Yeah, both really fun, really funny teams. Worth seeing if you like sketch comedy. What the Maud teams are doing is really great.
It was such an improv-heavy place. Still a lot of improv, which is great. But the sketch kind of got neglected, and the Maud teams have helped hugely to like create a sketch culture. The shows they do, and then the people who are on the teams doing shows outside of Maud Night.
Yeah.
So
infusing a lot of fun writing and performing into the theater.
So come be part of a movement.
That's right.
Be part of this thing. That's...
Say finally be able to say that you are a member of something or part of something.
Belong to something for once in your life out there, listeners.
Get off of, you know, the internet and the tweetsvilles.
Yeah.
You know.
Just connect to somebody else. Would it kill you? Jesus.
No, it's not all about, you know, virtual stuff. You got to be.
You got to come down and see some live theater. You live in New York City for Jesus' sake.
What are you going to tell your grandkids?
Yeah. You're going to tell them all about Maud Night is what you're going to tell
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Like, I saw this sketch. And it was involved a parody of Barack Obama and Survivor, and I liked it.
So that's Monday at 8 o'clock, tonight at 8 o'clock.
Then Tuesday night at 11 o'clock, there is a show called The Macro Scene. This is part of our advanced classes performance shows where basically some advanced students, they create a form for 8 weeks, then perform it for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
This is being directed by Kevin Hines, and it's a bunch of great improvisers, and it's called a macro scene where they I think the idea is that, like, you go from scene to scene without sweeping. Like,
that's
right. They're all, like, geographically connected. Like, the first scene's, like, in a food court of a mall, and then two characters go down the escalators outside into a car, and we follow them into that car, and that's where the next scene is.
Yeah, I saw it last week. And it was amazing. It's a really great show.
Everybody is loving it. It's blowing people away.
Top-notch performances. Really great standout stuff.
Yeah. The next generation of UCB stars.
You got to see them.
Yeah.
Again, another thing
just
that
get
for
in
you to
on
be
it.
Part of.
Can you, would it kill you? Just get out of your house and join something else?
If you thought about people the way you thought about your stupid 401k.
Then you'd get out here and enjoy this show.
Yeah.
It's really great. It's 11 o'clock Tuesday.
Yeah, and so then Wednesday at 6 o'clock, we have the monthly WFMU's 7-Second Delay Live. This is a great, really fun show where the radio show 7-Second Delay broadcasts live from our theater every month from the great New Jersey radio station WFMU.
Wait, now I'm going to be ignorant here. They really broadcast the show?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought this was just like a review of talent. I should have talked to you about it before we started recording this. Really? They broadcast
it? Yeah, they broadcast the show live.
Cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really great. You can listen to the show.
I'm an idiot. Live is in the title of the show.
Right.
I feel like my father going, when do they tape Saturday Night Live? That's exactly what I have become.
Yeah, so it's really fun. It's a really cool thing to kind of watch and, again, be a part of.
Yeah, join in.
They have a lot of fun guests. The two guys that host it are really funny, and they always have different stuff going on there. It's kind of like watching a variety show.
And WFMU is awesome.
Yes.
It's just a great thing to support. So many great shows and great people on it. So So it's a fun merging when they come to the UCB theater. So yeah, that show would be a great thing to support.
And then you can also tell like your friends or your parents or whatever, like, listen for my laugh.
Yeah,
you know?
that always works.
Yeah, I'm gonna have a real distinct
that
fun.
That person is always the winner. Yeah. The one who likes to stand out in a studio audience. Yeah. Always the best person.
You can be the guy who claps a little bit too long.
Tell your grandkids.
Yeah.
I clapped a little too long after somebody made a reference to Pavement. So then Thursday at 7 o'clock, Jenny Slate is coming back to do her one-person show, Dead Millionaire, which is a hilarious show.
Yeah.
And this is the first time she's come back since she's been on SNL, right?
That's right.
She was doing the show a bunch, then she got SNL, and now she's come back to do the show again.
Yeah, Jenny Slate is a performer now on Saturday Night Live, and she's doing her show to get it in shape for L.A. I believe she's taking it to – or San Francisco, maybe. One of those places.
Yeah,
she's going out west.
We don't keep track of them once they leave this time zone. But it's a really hilarious show, and I'm sure it's part of the reason that she got her current gig. And she's a sweetheart, and she's really funny. And she and Gabe did the Big Terrific show, which was like a big stand-up hosted show in New York. Mm-hmm. So she's like, you know, she was like a big figure in like the comedy scene. I mean, and still is.
Sure.
Even though she's now moved into the national comedy scene. So it's cool that she's come back to do this show.
Yeah. And you should definitely – I mean, it's Jenny Slate from Saturday Night Live. You should definitely
shouldn't
check
be
it out.
That hard to promote. But we're putting a lot of work into it anyway.
Yeah, we are really putting our backs into it.
Yeah, we are not efficient marketers.
Then Friday, January 22nd, is A-side, B-side.
It's at 11 o'clock, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, John, you tell me what this show means.
So this show is hosted by James Eason, who you may remember from Mother and a lot of great improv groups.
Yeah, Mother, one of the best improv teams ever.
That's right.
I shouldn't have to say anything else. It's being hosted by one of the members of Mother. Just come down and watch the show.
Yeah, yeah, you know what this is.
Boy, although it's actually sketch.
Aaron Kafitz also hosts the show. They co-created
now,
it.
I don't know him.
Aaron Kafitz is James's cousin, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I see how this works. Nepotism.
Yeah, that's it. Nepotism.
Well, let's just lay it bare.
Mm-hmm. That's how I got this podcast.
Are we related?
No, my father is Mr. Podcast.
Oh, Jesus. So this is A-side, B-side, where a sketch group will do two sketches, one that they're sort of like known for and that is sort of a reliable hit single for
them.
A-side. And then the B-side will be some weird thing that they have an affection for but, you know, is weird. And so it will, you know, maybe be great or maybe just be strange.
There's nothing I can add to that description.
I said it right, right?
You did. You nailed it.
One of my favorite A-side, B-sides is when Murder Fist came on and their B-side was just that guy Henry described. It was like a series of people who all said, what are you doing later? One guy like mimes drinking a beer, oh, a little bit of this. And then one guy's like, oh, a little bit of this. And I think he like smoked a joint, like mimed that he would be smoking a joint later.
Mm-hmm.
And then Henry goes, what am I going to do later? And he mimed as if it was a casual thing to mime, getting drunk, shooting people, getting into a car, driving into a river and drowning.
Yeah. Those guys are amazing.
Yeah.
Those guys are really
I discovered
great.
Them through this show. So come here and see some great sketch groups.
Yeah.
Go Friday 11, A-side, B-side.
Because you're going to see some three great sketch groups
this
Friday. This week is New Excitement, who are great. I can't say enough about them.
Yeah.
They did a show here, Really Good News, that ran for a few months, and it was great. Really nice people, really funny group.
I don't think they're nice people.
Oh, you don't?
No,
you're
I
taking
do.
A,
no,
a
I do.
Stance
I really
against
do.
That?
I was, I can't hold
you're
that.
Starting a few. You can't even stick
I can't
your own
commit,
feud.
No,
huh?
I have no commitment to anything. What's the next group?
So it's New Excitement, Kelly and Greg, and Mr. White Pants. So those are three great sketch groups that you want to see this week on A-side, B-side.
And Saturday at midnight, what's happening?
Oh, we got Snakes, the comedy rap group with Billy and Adam.
From the Harvard Sailing Team.
From Harvard Sailing Team, yeah. They do a group called Snakes that does a monthly show here at the theater called Future Sex Love Snakes.
And they have live snakes on stage?
No, they don't have live snakes on
stage. Okay, well, that's too bad. I mean, that's certainly what's implied.
Maybe you should show up and shout your suggestions from the audience.
Now I'm paying attention to the titles of these shows since I clearly didn't even know what the WFMU show was about, even though it's described incredibly accurately in the title.
So now you're paying too much attention to them.
There's
and
no
making
snakes in
the large
show? They
assumptions.
Don't bring snakes?
No, they don't. They don't bring any
Would
snakes.
Would the show be improved by snakes?
It might be.
Well, then maybe they should do that. They're high-energy guys. They can make that happen.
And so they put on a rap concert once a month.
Oh, really?
And it's great.
Oh, wow.
So you can check that out Saturday the 23rd.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a good bunch of shows.
It is.
So stay tuned, and when we come back, we are going to bring on the co-writer and star of Tupac the Musical and talk with those guys.
Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to the UCB Theater New York podcast. We're here with Evan Greenspoon and Corey Johnson from Tupac the Musical.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So tell us about your show. It's a parody jukebox musical, sort of like, but instead of being about something normal, mm-hmm. about the songs of Tupac Shakur. Am I getting that right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. It's it's a parody of musicals like Mamma Mia.
But it has more rapping.
Right, it's like Mamma Mia, more rapping, more cussing, more
dirtiness.
Yeah, more, I guess, flesh.
And so just in the style of those musicals, you've taken like the songs and kind of forced them into some story just to give the excuse to get to the songs. Right,
exactly. Yeah, the story is pretty nonsensical.
It takes place in a mall food court at a China Walk.
Yeah.
Where two workers are, you know, going about their lives, but they want to go to California. So right.
And then we bring in the California song. Not
right.
To give it away.
Right. Come in. There might be some spoilers here.
Right, yeah.
I was going to say, if you didn't do the California song, I was going to suggest that you were missing a great opportunity. I was like, oh, they should have told you the California song.
Well, how did we miss that?
How do you not have that in there?
Right.
So why a Chinese restaurant? Why Tupac? Those are two kind of separate heavy questions. But where did this idea come from?
Everyone asks us about the Chinese restaurant thing. I don't know how
you
that
wrote
because
it.
You have you guys have a longstanding hatred of the Asian culture, and you're looking to undermine it. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
That the not so subtle sub message of your show is to stir up racial. Yeah. Hatred specifically to the Asian community.
Yeah.
Is that
travels
right? And that's
fast.
Also a standard tradition of most jukebox musicals.
Most jukebox musicals. And it's also the fact that you talk to a lot of graduate students about comedy.
I do, yeah. I mostly am. I go see shows with a bunch of graduate students just desperately trying to get a thesis together. They'll be like, oh, this really is like a postmodern look. I'm like, I'm on board. I don't even know what the rest of that sentence is,
yeah.
But I will agree.
So so what is the answer? Dispel these criticisms.
Well okay. Actually, Kevin and I, he's not here today, but. Kevin
DeBacker,
yeah,
who
and
also
I,
wrote the
he
show,
co-wrote it with me. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a weird story. We actually met shooting this internet commercial thing for Match.com, and we had met a few times before, but we became friends on this shoot, and he told me that he wanted to do a one man show based on Tupac. And I told him, no, that's not a good idea. You should make it like a parody of jukebox music.
And you're having this conversation while shooting like an internet commercial? You were assuming a lot of authority in this position. You had all the clout to be cast into an internet web ad, and you were like, let me tell you, kid, you were way off base. And he just accepted your opinion?
Yeah,
he did.
Strong-armed yourself into this project.
Wow. Yeah, I said, you should do this, and let me write it with you.
Wow.
He agreed.
Yeah, he agreed. And then we brought on Corey.
Yeah, and Corey, what's your role in this?
Well, I had been hearing Kevin talk about this Tupac the musical for so long, and I was like, what is this going to be? I cannot wait. And then he asked me to come read it with them, and it was hilarious, so obviously I wanted to get involved. And I play a bunch of different characters. I sort of play five different people throughout,
yeah.
Just sort of coming in and out.
He's pretty much the star.
Right, so I strong-armed my way in and made myself the star of the show. It's just, it's so fun, it's so silly, so I was so psyched to be able to join.
What are some of the characters you play? You play Dr. Wu, you play, who else do you play? Henry Lee, you play a guy from Fort Lee, New Jersey, who's...
How long?
Yeah.
Jesus. Even within the construct of this joke, that was a bad joke.
Right. No, you play one of your characters is like the suicidal guy who kind of loiters around the mall.
Yeah, the guy, the old guy who just wants attention, so he just threatens to kill himself and his cat. And then I play this sort of almost rapist.
And near rapist.
Near rapist.
Yeah, he's kind of the sleaze bag
right.
of the mall, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then I play a trashy woman who's addicted to gangbangs.
She's my favorite. Yeah.
Now, isn't it true that you've come under a lot of heat for everything you've said about the murders of Biggie and Tupac? Your show's taken a really hard line and pretty much assigned responsibility for the murder of Biggie right to Tupac. Isn't that most of the show?
It's been, yeah, and like the blogs are picking that up, so there's a lot of outcry.
Well, it ends with a speech. Like the last 10 minutes are just...
10 minutes of a 25-minute show is a speech. Yeah, so it's a jukebox musical parody.
Yeah, about how he deserved everything that he got. Right.
Oh, wow. Exactly. That's a lot more angry than I had heard.
Yeah.
So are you guys big musical theater fans? You big Tupac fans? Big hip-hop fans? Like, is this something that you have a lot of experience with?
Kevin really loves Tupac. He knows
After you gave him permission to like Tupac.
Exactly. And I know musical theater, and then Corey and I both have musical theater backgrounds.
I didn't really know much Tupac before this.
Yeah, to be honest, neither did I.
It's been an eye opener into the world of Tupac. He's amazing.
And he's great. Yeah, his stuff is legit.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah, I was never like a huge rap
I was late
fan,
to that also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel so much cooler now, though. You know? Like, yeah, I know some Tupac.
It's weirdly the same way I felt when I got to know Pavement's first couple albums. It's like, that's what you've all been talking about.
Yeah.
Like, just this thing that a subculture loves, and then I know about it.
Mm-hmm.
I need to listen to some Pavement to get that. But
you feel hang out with me. If it's all okay right. with Evan, you should I think it's some stuff you'd really like.
Have you guys heard anything from Tupac's people? Has there been any kind of outward reaction to the show, or has the show shown up on anybody's radar that's associated with Tupac?
Not like officially.
No. We were definitely looking around after our first couple shows. We would, you know, I was like Googling the name of our show all the time to see if anyone was, you know. Hearing about this, but as far as we know to this time,
there's been a couple blogs that have seen this like come up and like been skeptical or like, what is this going to be, hilarious or is this going to be awful, but nothing from like official,
like people wondering if it's for real, like, oh, this is a straight up true jukebox musical as opposed to what it really is, which is like, I mean, of course you execute it well, but it's supposed to be, the idea is funny that this would be a jukebox musical.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Tupac and musical theater are quite far apart. So,
and I think some on some of the blogs, it seems like what they're afraid of is that we're making fun of Tupac, and that's really not the.
Sounds more like you're making fun of jukebox musicals,
yeah,
if anything.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the joke. You know, from the beginning, writing this, like, the joke has always been on musicals and. Really us. The joke's been on us.
Yeah, there's definitely no, within the show, no making fun of Tupac.
We don't even mention his name.
Oh, no, at the beginning.
in the beginning, you do, right?
Oh, at the very beginning. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. There's sort of an introductory kind of speech at the beginning, or like a character that brings you into the world.
Right, the director.
What are the technical demands of doing that? You do the UCB theater, so like you're trying to do a musical there. I mean, there's a good sound system and good stuff there, but a lot of shows, they perform without a whole lot of tech and a whole lot of rehearsal because there's so many shows and there's not a lot of rehearsal time. And
Yeah, actually, we, you know, when Kevin and I were writing this thing, we had decided that we wanted to try to keep it as minimal as possible. And
that didn't really happen.
No. We wanted to have no light changes, and thank God our director Chris Kelly, who's wonderful, he came in and he said, he strong-armed his way, and he said, no, there are going to be lots of light changes, and just trust me, it'll work. And he really took care of all the lighting for us. As far as
Chris Kelly was on the mod team 27 Kidneys.
Yeah.
Which is a great mod team and has written some amazing sketches. He wrote 15 Seconds, which is one of my favorite sketches that came out of he's written like a million.
Yeah,
he's like, and writes for The Onion. He does stuff for the
Game Show. Passive Aggressive Game Show is another
story. Oh yeah, hilarious.
He was great to have on board. He came in towards the end of the process. Not well, like the middle. And he
You guys were auditioning for another internet web ad. Chris Kelly was there. Right. You're like, because you're here, we know that you have the authority to take over this project.
Yeah, this show has sort of developed on the strength of whoever can be the most alpha personality right. at the time.
Chris gave his approval that this project move forward. He weaseled his way in. But no, he's like so quick. So like we, you know, we'd be like looking at a scene and like talking about like what jokes were there and like what to make. How we can make it funny, and he would just, you know, throw out these one-liners that would just make us laugh for, you know, for hours and hours and hours. No, but he's just so smart and quick, and yeah, he was
he's king of the one-liners.
Yeah,
Chris Kelly is like he's like an old borscht belt kind. I don't know if you know him. He's like very like vaudevillian. He just like he walks the room usually with a velvet smoking jacket and just right. starts. He just starts to my wife and like oh with the kids and he's just like right away.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
We should also mention that Laura Zeiss is also in the show.
Yeah,
right?
She's wonderful. Yeah.
She plays Brenda.
Yes. Brenda.
And she does, in fact, have a baby in
yeah,
the show, right?
She's pregnant and she's trashy, barefoot, and wet. she's been swimming in the.
Sounds like a Walt Whitman poem.
Tupac is, you know, this show is like really poetic. It's mm-hmm. very, you know.
The grad students I hang out with all agree. It is, it's yeah. the new American poetry.
They see layers and layers of postmodernism and poetry in it.
Right.
Would you guys be interested in consulting on the jukebox musical that Will and I have developed
yes,
about the songs of the rapper Snow?
Yeah, Transformer and oh, what is it? Yeah, well, what are the things that Transformer is another song of his that I think is much better. I think Informer is overrated.
His side to Informer was Transformer.
Yeah, it's just him listing all the attributes of Megatron.
Yeah, and the show is just Will and I singing Informer over and over again for 6 months.
If we could get you guys on board, we would appreciate it. We need
yeah,
consultants.
Yeah, sure. I can do the choreography.
I can do the co-writing.
Yeah.
You want to come in and do the co-writing? Because we got no one to co-write it.
Yeah, we just need somebody to push us around and strong-arm us right. into getting it done.
We're good at that.
This show is this Friday at 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah,
this show's going up next, 8 o'clock at the UCB Theater.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And you guys are paired with Best of Friends, or both, whole thing.
We were paired with them before. They're really, really funny people.
Yeah, it's a fun.
But you guys have a huge feud with them, isn't that right? What I'm saying right now,
yeah.
that I'm now making true.
They're
by...
sort of the West Coast sketch show, to,
right.
or the East Coast sketch show to your West Coast,
right? Exactly.
Sketch show, right?
It's awkward in the green room. It's there might be some knife fights.
Well, nobody wins in everybody wins in a knife fight. I should say it's more like everybody wins.
So let's everyone agree to go check out this show.
Yeah. So yeah check out it. Tupac the Musical this Friday at 8 o'clock.
8 p.m.
All right. Thanks a lot for coming in,
yeah,
Evan and Corey.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having
You're welcome. And we will be right back with more of the UCB Theater Podcast.
Okay, welcome back. So now for the third part of this podcast, we're doing a talking point discussion thing that we do. This week comes from an email that we got from Ari Scott.
That's right. She emailed us at UCBTNYpodcast@gmail.com.
So she sent an email even though she is engaged to you.
That's right. Full disclosure.
Speak. I assume she runs into you with somewhat frequent basis.
Yeah, yeah. In the interest of full disclosure, we are engaged, but that
yes.
had nothing to do with the selection of the question.
So this idea occurred to her, and she walked across the room and decided to send you an email.
That's right. Even though
you know
I was
what?
Yeah.
Because she's right. It's an intellectual proposition,
mm-hmm.
and it's more suited to a cold, sterile email environment.
That's right. You know, you present it to me verbally, I'm liable to just attack and pounce
yeah.
on it,
yeah.
you know, and just talk it all
Your
out.
Your emotions will just – yeah, she wants to present it to you in a nice preserved
right.
way.
Right, clinical.
And what is her topic?
So what she – her email is I'm – let me see here. I've always been fascinated by people at UCB who've spent a lot of time doing other things first.
Mm-hmm.
Who've spent years on professional degrees and careers and who are now performers.
Right.
Does spending a lot of time doing something other than acting make you a better improviser, worse, no difference, depends on the scene, etc.?
The answer is easy. No difference. It has no impact on anything, and it doesn't matter. Next question.
Yep. See you next week. it definitely does.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely...
So she brought up the example of Devlin Corrigan, who
yes.
is a medical doctor.
Mm-hmm. He is a performer on a Harold team here and also an actor on a Maud team.
Right. So he's heavily immersed in the scene, but he's a doctor, mm-hmm. which means that he did some work before coming here.
That's right. He's also hilarious. He's a great performer.
He's hilarious.
I've had the pleasure of being on a team with him, and he's great.
He's a ridiculous man. And but here he is likely competent in another field.
Yeah.
And so then you were mentioning Zubin.
Yeah, Zubin Parang, who also is on both a Harold team and a Maud team.
But I didn't know he has another career. What does he do?
He's a lawyer.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I guess
you're learning a lot of things this week, aren't you?
I don't believe he's a lawyer.
You don't believe it?
No, because could it be a hoax that he's just putting up to like gain credibility?
I've never seen him perform law.
Never seen Devlin practice medicine.
That's true.
These guys have good stories. Devlin, and who else do we know that like has had like other things? Joe Wenger was a teacher.
That's right.
And a middle school teacher in New York Public School, which was a pretty demanding job mm-hmm. for a long time before he came and ran this school.
Yeah. You could even, I mean, there are people like, I think about people like Adam Frucci, who is a writer for...
Oh, no, we can't count Frucci. He's a blogger.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's not...
He sits at home. I mean, mm-hmm. He has a full-time job where he's like reviewing gadgets for Gizmodo, right?
Yeah. And, he's an editor at Gizmodo.
Okay, so maybe he's good at it, but like... I'm not going to give Frucci credit. I mean, anybody who sits at home all day, I don't care how hard it is.
So you are – that is an invalid thing. That doesn't count.
It is an invalid career.
Okay.
It sounds too fun.
But people who – you know, just that idea of splitting your focus or concentrating on something else either first or simultaneously.
Right. I mean, like I've definitely had – I was a computer programmer for like 10 years, and then mm-hmm. I got into this whole scene, and now I do this pretty much full time. And I do miss – well, I don't miss working at a lot of the places I worked, but I mean like I miss being exposed to another world.
Mm-hmm.
Even just hearing conversations and hearing what TV and movies everybody talked about and just like the small talk around the office, it like informs your thinking a lot.
Sure.
I know I'll be doing like warm-ups or something – or like talking with people, and I'd be like, oh, what happened to you this week? And all of my experiences are improv related or sketch related. And they're boring to like talk about.
Sure.
They're not – sketch is not a good inspiration for more sketch, you know? And
yeah.
I kind of having a very varied experience.
And that's ultimately the thing is for me it's interesting in the idea of living in another world and getting those kinds of experiences and absorbing that kind of information and then being able to – just be more human because you're right. There is a thing where if you spend too much time around this or any kind of scene, you become less human, I feel like. But you can draw from those experiences and it exercises your mind in a different kind of way.
Yeah. But the flip side of that is you don't want to be a dabbler either. Like, I should say this. I've always admired people who like right away, very young, knew I want to be an actor. I want to be a comedian. I want to be a writer, and they just dive into it with a confidence that I still don't possess. Like, someone will just be right out of college or even right out of high school, like pursuing this career. Which, I mean, if you really want to get commercial success, and it feels like you almost have to, or at least it's a big advantage to get going young.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you don't have to, but I mean, like, it certainly seems like a big advantage. And there's that side of it, like, oh, all you've ever done is like done stand up, and then you got into improv and got into acting. Mm-hmm. There's about that I find impressive.
Yeah. Well, there's a drive. What you're talking about is like people who are
just – what is that word?
Drive.
It's not called, familiar.
Yeah, I had to look it up too.
Yeah.
But there's a drive that people just instantly kind of have. Either people have it at a very young age or sometimes people just develop it, you know?
Yeah. Or just a sense of confidence. I think I liked comedy when I was out of college, but it would have felt arrogant to think that I could go into acting. I'd be like, no, who am I? Come on.
Right.
Give me a break.
So you decided to go into computer programming, or that
was your
thing?
I kind of fell into that. Like I did 4 or 5 years of aimlessly floating through various temp jobs as an eccentric dude. Not even that eccentric. Half watered down eccentric. Then I learned web programming was, something I learned.
And then I took
an improv class just because I missed being around funny people. And then later after doing that, I came around to the idea much later of devoting more energy and focus to it.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of people have that experience. Ari was a musician.
Yeah.
Still is a musician, but like was pursuing her musician career first and foremost and with a lot of time and energy for a while.
Right. Yeah. This was something that I – from her email, she –
because she communicated all this to you in email.
That's
of your communication is
– it's all email-based. We have never had a conversation before.
Okay. Well.
But yeah, she raised the point that she herself was somebody who dabbled in other things or aggressively pursued something else.
Yeah.
And then shifted focus to comedy and the UCB community.
Now I'm trying here without having prepared anything at all to think of other people who fit this example, and I'm coming up dry.
I am as well. I'm sure there are other people.
I'm sure we know people.
Mm-hmm.
We should maybe have spent 10 seconds even thinking
even
about
researching
this
it.
Or spending some time. Who does other things?
I think the general point, though, is the idea of...
I thought of one.
Oh, go ahead.
Graham Chapman from Monty Python. He was a doctor, just like Devlin.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he stopped being a doctor when he became part of a comedy writing duo.
Okay.
With John Cleese.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever their job was before Monty Python, he quit being a doctor to do that.
Okay. So there you go. So there's, you know, there's that example of somebody who is doing something else and then shifts their focus completely.
Right.
That's an example of somebody who shifts their focus completely. But
right.
There are a lot of people, not a lot, but there are people that we've talked about and there are sure other people that we're forgetting who split their focus.
Yeah.
You know, who are involved in something, something outside of, something admirable and really great outside of the comedy scene.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's okay to decide that you're just going to have two things going on in your life. Like, it's totally possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can be just like, nope, I'm doing this career, and then I have this other thing that I make time for and I've devoted enough energy to get good at, and I'm just going to be – that's the way it is going to happen.
Right.
I mean, the pressure to commit to one thing and one thing only, it's true that that's the only way to really become a master at something or get really great at it.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't – you can delay that, I feel like. I mean, you can – you shouldn't prematurely cut off an option of something that you're enjoying
mm-hmm.
or whatever.
I'm going to delay it as long as I can.
Oh, God.
I'm going to ride it right to the end. Yep. I'm going to collapse doing eight things.
What do you split amongst? You write sketch comedy. You do improv comedy. You write that Tumblr about, like, bands and music and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, my obsession with 90s music. Yeah.
Right, yeah. So you listen to 90s music, which that can't take that long.
Oh, it takes a long time. Yeah. I have a lot of 90s music to listen to every day. I have to listen to Stone Temple Pilots' Core album in its entirety every day.
I think you're pretty consolidated.
Well, it's a lot of different things. It's like you're talking about. I
guess improv and sketch is a division.
Sure. It all is. It's all like focus. Like, I could sit in a room and write comedy. All day,
oh, okay, right.
Every day.
Yeah, I'm going to be a writer. And like,
right.
You just spec scripts and screenplays and treatments
right.
and whatever. And yeah.
And I would be probably a great
– Oh, you'd be amazing. Let's
yeah.
Sit for, you'd be absolutely flawless.
Especially me.
Yeah.
I would be just incredible. I would take off like an eagle.
Versus being an actor, like, okay, I'm going to audition all I can and get as much exposure and try to network that way or something
right.
like that.
Or versus like, okay, well – either this day I'm going to worry or I'm going to focus on performing and then
yeah.
the next day I'm going to focus on writing and then the next day I'm going to focus on directing or like these 2 hours I'm going to focus on this thing and these next
yeah.
few hours I'm going to focus on this thing.
Right. Everyone's always saying they're going to do that.
Sure.
Every conversation I have with anybody of any talent whatsoever says, going forward, I will now be organized about my time.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody ever really is totally. I mean, some people are better at it than others.
Right. But are the best people the people who can do that?
I would assume yes.
Mm-hmm. Or
I heard some old interview with Woody Allen where he said like he realized coming up that other people around him who were just talented were distracted. He goes, distractions are a major problem. You have to focus on. I
sure.
remember saying something exactly like that.
Yeah.
He's
what
good.
Did he do?
I don't know. I think he.
Who is he?
He was friends with Diane Keaton for a while.
Oh,
and that's all he did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read about him on her Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that thing, and there's, you know, that Buddhist kind of saying of, you know, if you are doing more than one thing at once, you're not good at either of them.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But that's annoying.
I think that's a direct quote from
exactly how they put it.
The Buddha. Yeah.
Yep.
A lot of uhs and ums.
He was a very, like, shoegazing kind of hands in his pockets guy.
Yeah.
A lot more mellow than people have portrayed him as.
Yeah.
I think but I get, you know, you need to take a break. Like if you were, John, this like mythical version of yourself where every single day you just wrote
an even more mythical version of myself, you mean?
Let's just say mythical at all. There's certain to be. Let's I don't know. And you'd be boring. Like you would need to have a break and have other things happen to you and
sure.
And be open to other experiences. And also, we keep framing things in terms of getting a job or commercial goals. It doesn't have to be that. Like, you could just decide for art's sake that you're going to devote yourself to, like, to like writing or something. Like that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in New York City where it's like everyone's got an agenda, but yeah, you could just decide like I want to think of myself as a comedian first.
Right.
Before I do like before I think of myself as whatever, like a certain occupation or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then if that's your decision, then the divisions in yourself that you're saying, like improv sketch, you're not divided. Like you're all pursuing your identity as a comedian.
That's true. Yeah. I see what you're saying, but I do think in terms of just the muscles that you work.
Yeah.
And the way that you apply it. Like, yeah, you could do a bunch of different kind of comedic things.
Right.
And be like,
I guess I don't quite know what I'm saying when I say that. Just someone's walking down.
Do you
want
to take some time to kind of collect your thoughts?
I guess I should write it out.
I can talk about Stone Temple Pilots for a couple of minutes pace back and forth.
No, it's all right.
But one thing I will say is that I do think doing a bunch of outside things. The thing that I do agree with is that you have to do things other than comedy or whatever it is.
Yeah. You need to go on input.
Yeah. You need to – this is Billy Merritt's big thing always, that he would always say, like, go read a book or watch a movie.
Yeah.
Do things like that. Like, feed whatever your feed your comedic sensibility.
Billy Merritt, voracious reader.
Yeah. Always reading.
Oh, boy. I would stop talking about books. Eric Chenoy would always say, like, boy, that Billy Merritt, he reads.
And if anybody knows, it's Eric Chenoy.
Well, it's a good point, even though I'm making fun of him.
Right.
You're
allowed
to. Can't you always tell on stage when someone has come from a day job? Like, if you're watching, like, the first Herald on Herald Night or a class show or a show anywhere,
mm-hmm.
or I feel like I can tell, that someone has come from a day job and they had, like, half an hour in between their job to do their comedy show, mm-hmm. I feel like there's, like, a look of sadness
right.
on
and
them.
They're still wearing –
like, they're still, like, covered in the stress
oh, yeah.
of getting their work done and they're trying to, like, shake it off. But,
yeah.
Like, a little bit glassy-eyed. Someone will come out and initiate something like, oh, hello, General. They'll be like, what? Like, they can't even get – it's like, you call me? What's going on?
Yeah.
I definitely feel that way. When
I've felt that way too. Yeah. When I've just – when I used to work day jobs and even sometimes now. I mean, I still work a day job that, you know, requires a great deal of focus and concentration. So even
– like, they're still wearing khaki pants and, like, a tucked-in button-down shirt.
Right.
Because they didn't have, you know, they came
no
from,
time to change.
Yeah. They
yeah.
came from an office where you have to look like a normal person, and now they're pretending to be a dragon.
Yeah, you definitely can see that, and I've definitely experienced that and felt that.
It's funny.
It's very funny. So, but I think it is. It's I'm always interested when I see people or when I know people who are pursuing something or have like a big job, like being a lawyer or something like that, and they're also pursuing comedy.
Yeah.
Because it's, first of all, it's admirable. It's super admirable.
Yeah.
You've put all of your time and energy, so much time and energy into something that is so huge.
Right.
And now you're also putting your time and energy into yeah. another thing that is huge and being great at it.
Right.
You know?
I think I don't know what to say. Like, at some point you do have to focus up if you really want to, like, get good at something. But there's no denying that those people bring something to the world that other people don't have to draw on.
Right. You're definitely borrowing energy from one
yeah.
to use in the other is I think what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like if you concentrated just on one or the other.
You would have more effort that you would have put there.
Sure.
But I can't deny that like there's more interesting – certainly in class that I'm teaching, students who come from wildly different like backgrounds or experiences are interesting.
Yeah.
Like if they're able to bring that into the scenes mm-hmm. and their different viewpoints, it's like
yeah.
you wake up and pay attention to it.
So culturally and sensibility-wise, it's great to be a well-rounded person, and it's super important.
Right.
And the people who have had rich kind of backgrounds or continue to have rich backgrounds and read a lot and invest a lot of time in thinking about or exposing themselves to other things tend to be more interesting or certainly have an interesting, fascinating thing about them when they perform.
I think that's well said.
Thank you. But in terms of like the other issue, which is like, does having two big things going on split your focus in a way that is potentially detrimental
yeah.
to what you're doing? I think that what we're saying is, yeah, it could
be. Has to. I think
sure.
at some point it must.
Yeah. At some point, you're probably more inclined to think one or the other is
yeah.
the way for you to go.
Right. So are we condemning our friends' life choices?
Yeah, we are. We're totally condemning them.
Okay. Well, we should know because we've achieved
Right. We have achieved a podcast.
Yep.
No, we're definitely not condemning those people's choices. Not at all. I think we're just using those examples as a springboard to talk about a larger issue.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
I made a decision at one point to stop computer programming and do this all the time, and it was a relief. I mm-hmm. reached a point where I wanted to have it occupy everything.
Sure.
But if I had done it much earlier, I probably wouldn't have liked it. I don't think – even if I'd said I was doing it, I wouldn't really have done it.
Yeah.
I guess it's one of those things you gotta just make that judgment call.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, I worked in the fashion industry before.
What?
Yeah, for no, just...
Why did you, really?
Pure stupidity. I mean, not stupidity, just, like, desperation.
What happened?
I was working in a job, I was temping for a military subcontractor.
Okay.
It was a temp job right out of college that turned into a permanent job because I had nothing else going on.
Sure.
And after a few years, I hated it. Okay. I hated it after
a
few months.
How was that the fashion industry?
So what happened was I knew a guy who was the CEO of a small fashion jewelry company in Soho.
CEO of a 4-person company?
Yeah, it literally was like a 10, 12-person company.
I like that guy's attitude to call himself a CEO.
Yeah. He was very ambitious. And I was talking to him. Because I was looking for a new job, and a friend of mine said, tell everybody that you talk to that you're looking for a new job. Just work it into conversation.
Okay.
And it worked, because I worked it into a conversation with this guy, and he said, I'm looking for somebody. Send me your resume.
Okay.
And so he interviewed me and hired me for a position that I was not qualified for.
What was it?
It was a production assistant in a fashion jewelry company. Production assistant means something different than it does in our world.
What does it mean in the
jewelry
world?
It basically means in the fashion world, it means that you are kind of the middle person between the designers and the factories that make the stuff.
Okay.
So you will
you're involved in getting the stuff made.
Yeah, you talk to the designer and they tell you like what you see the designs for things. And
I don't mean this in an offensive way.
Go
You'd
ahead.
Be one of the last people I would think would be like directly involved in the fashion
I had
industry.
No business being there. And that's my point, is I had no business being there. I absolutely hated it. I hated every day of it. And I parlayed that into a job with Ralph Lauren.
What?
Yeah. I was sick and tired of being there, and I knew I wasn't going anywhere. And so
I know the answer here is to go to Ralph Lauren.
Yeah, more fashion jobs. And so I did the same thing for Ralph Lauren. And it was the reason I brought it up, A, is to talk about myself and glorify my own existence. And B, to say that there were moments during those 5 years that I worked for both of those companies where I honestly thought to myself, this is it. This will be it. Like, I'll just dive further into this. And, like, I'll just really get into this. And I'll go back to school. I'll go to FIT.
Right.
And be one of the miserable people who goes to FIT.
Even then, you were using the word miserable to describe it.
Yeah. I will never smile again in my life. But, you know, there are those times when I had that thought of, like, I'll just do this forever. But I was never really happy about it.
Yeah.
You know, it was just sort of trying to convince myself.
Well, that awesome time just after college is a really, really, really wonderful time for choices.
Just laced with strong decisions.
Yeah, and it's something that Cameron Crowe has made millions of dollars off.
That's right.
So I think that's your answer, Ari. I hope that next time you send an email to your fiance, I hope this answer satisfies you, and every time you send an email, you're just as satisfied with the response.
Every email that you send me from now on, Will and I will discuss on the air.
Yep, everyone. So that's the end of our podcast for this week. We want to thank Corey Johnson and Evan Greenspoon for coming and talking about Tupac the Musical.
And you can see that this Friday at 8:00.
And then I want to thank me
mm-hmm.
and
I
John
would like to thank you as well
for doing this.
Without you, I'd be nothing.
Okay. For the same way, let's say.
And also, if you want to email us a thought or question or something for us to discuss or anything at all, you can email us at ucbtnypodcast@gmail.com. Wow. I really designed
that
myself
really,
a mouthful with
that. That was deliberate, actually. Yeah. I just really spelled it out.
ucbtnypodcast@gmail.com. Sorry, it's at gmail.com.
They'll get it. So, so thanks, everybody, and come back next week.
See you next week.
The UCB Theater New York podcast is brought to you by a generous donation from the Little Donnie Foundation.